So good morning, everyone. Thank you, Patrick, for hosting yet another session here at the meetings. As Patrick indicated, this talk was proposed and supposed to be given by Mike Verbraskis from NC State University. He was unable to come, and so he asked me to give the talk. And this is some work that we've just kind of started to address because we've seen that there's a disconnect between the way that people are determining rainfall normality. And, well, this is a hydric soil session or a wetland soil session, so what does that have to do with rainfall normality? And so several of the field indicators of hydric soils require analysis of rainfall normality. And then more importantly, perhaps, the hydric soil technical standard requires that people do an analysis of rainfall normality when evaluating their results. So water table records are required when we're looking at hydric soil issues and trying to identify hydric soils in areas that lack a field indicator. And typically we use 1 or 2 years of data and then use that to represent long-term trends in rainfall. And so for our purposes, normal rainfall is represented by a range in rainfall values, not a particular number like a mean or an average. And so here in the figure, you can see some data from one of our studies where we have rainfall as the small bars at the bottom of the graph. Then we have water table data as the graph that's rolling, 30-day average of the water table. And the shaded area represents the range of the 30th to 70th percentile, which is what is typically considered normal precipitation over time. And when we look at rainfall, we like to look at a long-term average, like a 30-year average. But when we're doing a study, I don't have 30 years to collect that much data. And so we look at a short period of data, and then we use these types of figures to determine if we're in that normal long-term range. So it appears that there are two methods that are currently being used to analyze rainfall normality, both promoted by different entities within the USDA NRCS. So you can see how this could be a problem, especially since, based on our analysis, some of which I'll share with you this morning, those two methods yield different results and, in some cases, widely differing results. So this has led to some confusion as to which methods should be used under what sort of scenarios. And just to push the point further, even the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils, the group that determines which hydric soils indicators can be applied in what areas, also uses these two methods. For example, the field indicator F18 reduced verdict uses a simple standard deviation of normal rainfall range, and the hydric soil technical standard uses what's known as the WETS approach, both of which I'll briefly outline for you. So the first method is highlighted in soil taxonomy, and so we'll call that one the soil taxonomy approach. And as an example, directly from soil taxonomy, that document defines normal soil moisture regimes on page 29 using annual precipitation that is plus or minus one standard deviation of the long-term 30 years or more mean annual precipitation, and mean monthly precipitation that is plus or minus one standard deviation of the long-term monthly precipitation for 8 to 12 months. The take-home point of this slide is that they're using a regular standard deviation approach, plus or minus one standard deviation. And so we see that in the field indicator of hydric soils F18 reduced verdict. We'll just skip down to C here, where in order to apply that indicator, the analysis has to occur during a normal or drier season and month, which is defined as within 16 to 84% of probable precipitation, which is equivalent to the one plus or minus one standard deviation. Conversely, we also use the WETS approach, which has been defined by the National Climatic Data Center. And so this is essentially the meteorologist's approach, not the soil taxonomy approach or the standard deviation approach. And so we use these WETS tables. They're generated for over 8,000 weather stations from around the United States. And so when we're looking at hydric soil studies, one of the things that we often do is find the closest WETS location and use that data from that location to determine if we are in a normal rainfall period, a wetter than normal period, or a drier than normal period. And highlighted in blue here, if I can get the mouse to work, in this section is really what we're after. And so these two columns are based on 30 years of data and represent the 30th and 70th percentile, essentially what is the normal range. So this is some data from Greenville, North Carolina. And so just to highlight that, for the month of March, the 30 years worth of data would indicate that normal rainfall would occur between 3.14 and 4.71 inches for that month. So any value below 3.14 would be considered a drier than normal period, and any rainfall greater than 4.71 would be a wetter than normal period. So the wets categories, that 70th and 30th percentile values, are not based on a straight standard deviation approach. The meteorologists at the National Climatic Data Center utilize this approach that applies a z-score. And so for them, they consider a normal period, or 30% of the mean to 70th percent of the mean, to be a z-score that's between 0.524 greater than or less than 0.524. So these z-scores are a little bit different. So why do they use this z-score? Why don't they just apply a normal standard deviation approach? Well, it's because the meteorologists have done some analysis and they've realized or recognized that the rainfall distribution is not normal. And so if we don't have a normal distribution of rainfall, then we should not be potentially applying a normal distribution as we would see in a standard deviation. And so actually they describe this as a gamma distribution. And so here's just an example. Practically having thought about this a little bit, Mike and I both came to the conclusion that, well, you know, we're more likely to have this kind of gamma distribution than a normal bell curve shaped distribution. We're talking about precipitation data. So it's not normally distributed, and that's why we have to use these z-scores. So what is a z-score? Again, this is from the meteorology folks. So they look at the 30-year rainfall data, and they run it through this series of equations. And in bold here, you can see a rearranging equation. We can calculate the z-score, which is essentially the average precipitation plus the z-score times the standard deviation. And so for our purposes, to look at that 30 to 70th percentile normal range, if you run through these calculations, the z-score again ends up being about 0.524. So what does that mean for us in terms of rainfall evaluation? Under the soil taxonomy approach, here on the far side of the screen, you can see that the normal or bell-shaped curve yields a standard deviation of the average precipitation plus or minus one standard deviation. The climatology folks the WETS approach looks at the average precipitation plus or minus that z-score, 0.524, times the standard deviation. So practically, this results in the fact that when we compare the two methods, the WETS approach ends up with a normal range that is about half of the standard deviation. And I will now stop with the math and the equations, and we'll look at some data. So the objective of Mike and I's work is to compare the normal rainfall ranges using these two different methods across a variety of soil moisture regimes throughout the country, and then look at how these differences might affect decisions that are made by the National Technical Committee using some real data from some of our previous studies. And so this is what a lot of what I did was crunching the numbers. Mike was much more on the intellectual developing these kind of ideas behind this, and I want to give him full credit for kind of organizing the way the study was done. So I went out and gathered 30 different sites and looked at rainfall data based on the standard deviation approach and this WETS approach using the z-scores. And so we had sites all across the country from Aquic, Aridic, permafrost or semi-permafrost zones, Udic, Usic, and Xeric soil moisture regime areas. And so we looked at 30 years of data. That's typically what's used in these rainfall normality studies. We computed the means and the standard deviations over that period and then compared those to the WETS scores to see what kind of differences we saw. So this is a graph that shows the comparison of the two ranges. So on the x-axis, we have the monthly average rainfall. On the y-axis, we can see the difference in the normal range. So essentially, how different were the two methods? So for example, you know, a data point here is one in which if you compare the WETS method with the standard deviation method, you get a difference in normal rainfall of 1 inch of rain. Okay, and so what you can see here is that when the monthly average precipitation is low, you don't see a lot of differences between the two methods, or the differences are relatively small. But as the monthly rainfall increases, we start to see some huge differences in what's considered normal rainfall. So for example, by the time you get out here to where we have 6 inches of rainfall, we're seeing differences in what's considered normal of up to 5 or 6 inches of rain. And so that could make quite a significant difference when we're doing analysis of normal rainfall in these hydric soil studies. So just to highlight that, we've kind of outlined some of the more egregious cases that were from the data set. And this is all from the analysis of those 30 sites looking at that 30-year rainfall period. So to zoom in on some of those outliers or the more extreme events, you can see that they happen when the monthly rainfall varies widely from the average value. And so, for example, here in Eureka, California, we have one instance where the monthly average rainfall is 5.8, but in 1 year, in 1999, they only got 0.4 inches. So that is the outlier here above. The rest of the sites are when we had much higher rainfall than the average. So you can see here again for Eureka, for the month of December, the average rainfall is 6.4 inches, but these extreme events, we get 23 inches, and that's where we get these huge differences when comparing the two methods. And so you can see that across the country, we had quite a few of these extreme events that caused these massive differences in what's considered normal rainfall, comparing the two methodologies. When we do hydric soil studies, we not only evaluate the current period, but we look at the previous 3 months. And so this has quite an opportunity to impact our data. So here's some of the data from one of our studies. And what we do is we compare the data from the previous 3 months to when we're doing groundwater table monitoring. And so that can have an impact over several months of our study period. So what does this mean from a practical standpoint? So we went back and looked at some hydric soil studies that we've done over the years. One up in Michigan with James DeLee, who's here. One that was down in Washington County, Alabama, and then some more recent work in Sacramento, California. And in each of these studies, we were able to find instances where the difference between these two methods led to a significant change in what our outcomes would have been. For example, in the work in Michigan, under the WETS methodology, the month of July was in a wetter than normal category. Under the standard deviation category methodology, that would have been considered normal month of rainfall. The same thing in Washington County, Alabama, where we saw periods moving both from wet to normal and from dry to normal, okay, as that normal range is expanded using the standard deviation approach or the approach described in soil taxonomy. And then the same thing in Sacramento. So you can see what's happening here is that when we apply the soil taxonomy approach, it's essentially doubled the size of what's considered normal. And so we're losing some of our ability to differentiate between dry and normal and wet conditions. The other thing I'd like to point out is that when you make that expansion on the low end, many of the categories exceed zero on the downside, which in effect makes it impossible to have a dry month. Okay, so if your normal range exceeds zero, then you can't have a dry condition. And we actually saw that in 68 of the 360 cases that we evaluated. So this is quite a bit of change for these studies. So we've listed these conclusions as tentative. We're still working on this. Mike has enlisted the help of a statistician to help us understand these z-scores and these gamma distributions. And so in conclusion, the soil taxonomy approach essentially doubles what's considered the normal range. And in terms of the technical standard, the soil taxonomy approach includes more wet years into the normal category. It also makes it harder to have a dry year. And so we would suggest that the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils should choose one method for assessing rainfall normality. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Yes, Marty.
I wasn't aware that the soil taxonomy method was being used or advocated at all by the technical committee. I always sort of thought that the WETS approach was what was sort of standard and acceptable.
And that's what Mike and I thought also. And so it wasn't until somebody brought this to our attention that we realized that there were these two methodologies that have been used. And so apparently the soil taxonomy approach or the standard deviation approach had been used in the past, and there may still be some remnants of that even in some of our own documents. Other questions or comments? In the back, yes.
So I might be remembering this wrong, but in taxonomy, it's all about normal years. And can you relate that to what you're talking about, normal months?
Yeah, so it goes down to how do you define what is normal? And so it appears in the taxonomy documents, they just use plus or minus one standard deviation when determining what is normal. But when you look at it from the meteorologist side of things, they would argue that potentially that's a erroneous approach, if you may, because of the way that rainfall is distributed.
Right. I understand that, but you're talking about normal months, not normal years.
So the same approach could be applied to a annual or monthly or weekly rolling average, kind of any time period.
And that's the question is, are those two the same?
I think how you derive them would be the same regardless of the time period that you're examining. But we will be doing more on this, and we hope to put together a manuscript kind of outlining these challenges. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob.